Hello, listeners out there. Welcome to the WOB Radio Hour. We are members of the IWW, Industrial Workers of the World. It is a union that was founded in 1905, and I'd like to introduce the people sitting around the table today that will bring you the show. Take it away, Al.
My name is Alan Anger, a longtime member.
My name's Noah. I joined back in March of 2021. I'm a recent member of the IWW, and I'm happy to be doing the union work that we do.
I'm Mac, and I've been a member since 2018.
My name's fellow worker Gordon. I'm a member since 2008. Previous to that, I was a member of the Machinists Union, and I retired from the shipyard in Bremerton.
And my name is Marilyn, and I've been a member for a long time, and I am a retired mental health counselor. And Lynn is on her way, but she's not here yet. Lynn is a fairly new member, and she was a paraeducator, and before that, a social worker. So today you will be hearing all kinds of things about workers' issues and workers' rights. We are a union, as I said, and it's the industrial workers of the world, because our union, contrary to trade unions, organizes along an industry or profession. So instead of dividing up the stenographers or the secretaries from the building maintenance, everybody is in one union that works for one industry. And so now Mac is going to read us an excerpt from the preamble to our Constitution.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the North American Regional Administration Constitution preamble, some excerpts. The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people and the few who make up the employing class. All have all good things in life. Between these two classes, a struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the means of production, abolish the wage system, and live in harmony with the earth. Instead of the conservative motto, a fair day's wage for a fair day's work, we must inscribe on our banner the revolutionary watchword, abolish the wage system. It is the historic mission of the working class to do away with capitalism. The army of production must be organized, not only for everyday struggle with capitalists, but also to carry on production when capitalism shall have been overthrown. By organizing industrially, we are forming the structure of a new society within the shell of the old.
Thank you, Mac. Makes you think a lot, doesn't it? So now we're going to go into a song for you all, and you're welcome to sing along out there if you know the words. You may have to read together. This is a song called The Red Flag, and it's to the tune of O Tannenbaum, because what the heck, we're in the holiday season.
The worker's flag is deepest red. It shrouded off our martyr dead. And ere their limbs grew stiff and cold, their lifeblood died in its every fold. Then raised the scarlet standard high, beneath its folds we'll live and die. Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying here. With heads uncovered, swear we all to bear it onward till we fall. Come dungeons dark or gallows grim, this song shall be our parting hymn. Then raise the scarlet standard high, beneath his folds we'll live and die. Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, we'll keep the red flag flying here.
Happy holidays, everybody.
And now for our next segment, Gordon and I will be giving you a labor update in regards to recent labor strikes and struggles. Gordon?
Hey, fellow listeners and fellow workers out there. This is a labor update. I try to give a couple of articles that I've found online or in print to bring everybody up to speed about what's going on in the labor movement in general around the country and sometimes in other countries because it has direct impact on us. This is the first article I got through the Portside website, which is a pretty good outfit for aggregating news articles about labor. And this article appeared in Jacobin, which is the magazine of the Democratic Socialists of America. And the article is written by Alex Press. And I've seen some of her stuff before. She's a pretty accurate labor reporter. And the first item I've got is about the IATSE struggle. IATSE is the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. And the news is that they were threatening to strike, but they ratified the basic and area standards agreements down there in Hollywood and other places. The thing is, though, it's sort of a mixed blessing. Alex Press calls it a worst-case scenario because what happened is that the union itself, although struggling righteously, has an electoral college-type system. It's no direct democracy, and you'll find most AFL-CIO affiliate unions and most business unions in general will have something like this. It's unwieldy and rare to have a general referendum like our union does, but that's what makes our union a bit different from the rest of them. But anyway, the delegates voted 349 yes to 282 no votes. So it looks on paper like, you know, a pretty good margin, but the raw numbers tell a different story. The majority of the rank and file votes, and it was real close, like a national election, was 50.3% no and 49.6% yes, meaning that they didn't like the agreement and they wanted to negotiate further. But the combination of votes for both contracts ended up being 50.3% yes to 49.7% no. Not perfect, but at least for the IATSE people who were about to go on strike, it's a positive development, even though they didn't get everything that they wanted. What's happening is that the union locals of the different trades in Hollywood and in television, you know, your electricians, your grips, your riggers, you know, all these folks that don't get to appear in front of the camera have been treated worse and worse over the past several years. And their big thing is extremely long work weeks. People are getting fatigued because they have, you know, 16, 17, 18-hour shifts. They have a short turnaround time of 10 hours, which means that if I get off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, well, then I got to show up at 3 o'clock in the morning because it's a 10-hour turnaround time. So you don't get any chance for rest. Accidents have occurred on the road. And, of course, recently we heard about the tragic event down in on set for a movie called Rust. And a cinematographer got shot and killed with what was supposed to be a prop gun, okay? But it was a live round that somehow got in there, and the police are investigating, the union's investigating, but I can kind of chalk it up to long work hours and people not paying attention, and a lack of concern by the health and welfare of the workers. So the workforce has been fired up by a lack of work lately because of the pandemic and a tighter labor market, which means a lot of people quit or retired or just got out of the trade. And so the fewer workers, they can argue for more premium wages. Yeah, it should increase their bargaining power with fewer workers. And they're all in communication with each other, which is kind of a nightmare for management because they weren't before. You know, the electricians had their own local and the riggers had their own local. But now they're working together a lot more, which shows momentum for moving forward. And the issues they were arguing against was that minimum turnaround time, the shifts being too long, safety hazards, etc.
Gordon, can I stop you for a minute?
Sure.
So, okay, because of their electoral setup,
yeah.
So they voted to accept the contract. What did they give up that they wanted that was in that for original demands?
Well, I don't have the exact numbers, but they said they made advances in wages and they made advances in turnaround time, mm-hmm. but they didn't get real specific about it. And it's a tentative agreement.
Okay.
So they ratified the tentative agreement, very barely, only by a delegate count instead of a direct democracy. So I didn't get all the stats as to how much exactly they're going to be gaining.
Okay, but it's tentative, so then they have to go back to the table and ratify it?
Yeah, they have to ratify it, but if the majority is ratified, and that could be dicey because of the slim margin. The organizers, the history of this is that in 1989, the infamous 80s, these guys had a strong contract. The IATSE has always been a pretty radical union. They gave up. Back in 1989, a five-day work week, they gave that up, right? This is all the concessions that they made. They ended double time for Saturdays and Sundays.
Wow.
Which is a premium pay for when working the weekend. And they ended the night differential, an issue close to my heart.
Yeah.
Because I used to work graveyard and swing most of the time. You get a little perk. You get a 7% differential on swing or 10%, however the agreement is. But the organizers note that the strike threat was partially successful and that the various locals are keeping in touch and trying to maintain newfound solidarity. The next issue I have, which is pretty recent, and it affects me and probably other people around the table directly, was an issue with Kaiser Permanente, the health maintenance organization.
Oh, yeah.
And I read this article on the website The Stand. And The Stand is put out by the Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO. And it is useful because it tells you, what's going on as far as negotiations. But it's pretty mainstream, and it gets on the Democratic Party and AFL-CIO line all the time. But this article was dated yesterday, the 19th. Apparently 52,000 members of the Alliance of Healthcare Workers, and I'll explain about that briefly in a second, which includes 3,400 Kaiser Permanente employees in Southwest Washington and Oregon. And they are represented now by the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals, OFNHP. And they reached the tentative agreement with Kaiser Permanente. What they want, now what I want to get at is that this is an alliance of several different labor unions, some of them pretty mainstream, some of them a little on the radical side, and I count the nurses and healthcare professionals unions more to the radical side than some of the unions representing them. So what they won is an end to the proposed two-tier wage system. And the listeners aren't familiar with a tier system. That means that new hires have to work for less money and on different schedule. And they could be right across the assembly line or right down the hospital corridor from workers who make way more money than they do. Mm-hmm. So like your entry-level jobs and even your step increases and your target rate when you're hired in is going to be less. So they ended that.
Wait a minute. Say that again. The listener needs to hear.
Okay.
Even if you are hired at a lower salary, your increases over time, which is called step, would continue to be lower.
Yes.
So you could work there for 20 years if you got hired tomorrow and never make as much as a nurse working today.
That's correct. And this is really, if you can imagine it, it's really bad for morale, especially since most of your newer employees are going to be younger. Most of your, senior employees are going to be older. This creates all kinds of tension and discontent between generations, between different skill levels. It's just a bad plan.
And it's workers, too.
Well, that's what I mean. It's putting everybody against each other. The UAW is famous for doing this for its auto workers, and they are very unhappy about it. Okay, so they got a good wage increase. Once again, they gave me a bunch of percentages over a five-year period, so it was like 2% 1 year, 3% the next year, but they were pretty satisfied with that. They have language in the contracts now that deals with racial justice, meaning that it's been noted people of color who are employees in the same hospital or the same industry in the region get treated poorly, get less wages. It's unfair and it's built into the system. And also, a very important thing, they have language to address the staffing crisis. Which means that, these people are working overtime because of the people who quit during the COVID shutdowns. So the reason I'm going to take this little bit of time to name off all these participating unions is to show the diversity of representation In other words, you'll hear about unions that have nothing to do with hospital work, but they represent the workers. Of the participating unions in this alliance of 52,000 members was United Food and Commercial Workers, specifically UFCW 21, United Steel Workers, USW, IBT, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Unite Here. And they got a really long name, but basically it's the old needle trades and hotel and restaurant employees that joined together. The KPNAA, which is Kaiser Permanente Nurse Anesthetist, I can never say that word, Association. These are the nurse practitioners who can run the anesthesia, put you to sleep, you know, and wake you back up, hopefully. The IUOE, International Union of Operating Engineers. Think about that.
Well, all of these people that work in different professions and different trades still get sick and still need nursing care, and yeah, it's in their best interest to make sure that the nurses are treated right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And also trained. That's the thing. Let's just finish up with this big litany of different unions. The Oregon Federation of Nurses and Hospital Professionals, and here we go, ILWU, International Longshore and Warehouse Workers Union.
Good.
They represent some, you know, because figure, you got a hospital, you got boilers in the basement, that's operating engineers, you got electrical systems and communication systems that go all through the building, that's a different union. And it's sort of, and a new one that came aboard was HNHP, Hawaii Nurses and Healthcare Professionals. So Northern California and Hawaii is going to be included in this new contract. They were touting wage increases across all trades, regardless of the hiring date, and fair contracts for newly organized workers in Hawaii and Northern California. When new unions come aboard and try to negotiate contracts, the union busters and the employers always try to go around them and discredit them. And it's on the books, a law, that they can't have another election for 12 months. If we all check the card at our workplace for forming a union and won the election, they couldn't decertify us for 12 months. It gives some breathing room for the outfit to get its act together. Also, they're talking about dispute resolution language and patient and worker safety. It looks pretty good to me, at least, you know, for a tentative agreement. And they're also going to get $15 million kicked into their education fund to continue ongoing training for professionals.
That's good.
It's really good because that means that you can have an ambition. If you're a lowly X-ray tech, you know, or just, you know, running a machine or being a nurse's aide, you can have schooling paid for by the union and the employer. More about that later, to target better jobs. Mm-hmm. And the third item of labor action is U.S. school bus drivers.
Are we leaving the Kaiser issue? Are you moving on?
Is there something you'd like something?
I have several things to say about that.
Go ahead, then.
First of all, I'm a retired nurse, although I was AFSCME, American Federation of State County Municipal Workers. Yeah. There was a health co-op in the Pacific Northwest called Group Health.
Yes, mm-hmm. I miss it.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I was a member from years ago. And by the way, I'm a retired nurse, so I pay attention to this stuff.
Yeah.
Group Health was started initially by union members and some socialists. And what they wanted to do was hire their own doctors, which at the time, back then, it wasn't that long ago, the American Medical Association and the Washington State Medical Association was really opposed to this. They didn't like the idea of people employing their own physicians and auxiliary healthcare people. But it was quite successful. I knew some of the founders, which is why I was sort of attracted to them. And then they had financial issues, so Kaiser purchased them. And the workers I talked to at Group Health said, yeah, we really need to do that. Management, I guess.
Well, and the people at Kaiser told me, oh, we'll run it exactly the way Group Health ran it. You won't have any changes. Well, that was a joke. Yeah.
They lied to you.
They lied.
And me.
Well, that's where Group Health came from, and then it was taken over by Kaiser. And just to close this up, the current CEO of Kaiser makes $4 million a year.
Jeez.
So that's probably one of the reasons why.
He's probably due for a raise.
Yeah. Think about this in terms of the difference between trade unions and industrial unions. the current situation is with the hospitals in Tacoma. I don't think really doctors have a union. They have a professional association.
Right. Yes.
And the RNs around here are SEIU.
Yes.
And then the other auxiliary staff, like the LPNs and other folks are...
UFCW.
Yeah, yeah, nice commercial workers, right.
Yeah.
So how that ends up in the hospital, I don't know. But they're not on, so, shall I say, not on the same team?
No.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a problem as opposed to the IWW, which says... If you work in a hospital,
you're all doctor, members. Nurse,
if you work in the kitchen, if you work in cleaning, all that stuff, we're all in the same union.
Yeah.
Which makes it a lot easier, I think, to reach our goals and to protect what we've got.
That's the key difference between trade unions and our type of union. There are a couple of unions that organize themselves sort of like us, but the IWW is pretty unique. It started that way.
And I'm glad we have to make that point. Thank you.
Absolutely. I did also want to add to this labor update as well. Burgerville recently successfully negotiated their contract with the Burgerville chain of restaurants down in Portland. So that's a big win. That's an IWW organized union. So it's good to hear good news coming out of Portland on that front. And then the other big win that's recently occurred in terms of labor strikes and organizing has been out at John Deere. They have very successfully struck for the past... Gosh, I think it almost reached the two-month mark,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah,
a couple months. That's a pretty long time to strike. And so they finally, the management at John Deere finally yielded and said, we'll approve your contract. And part of that contract was a 10% raise, which is a really good win for the workers out there. They certainly deserve it. They're organized through the UAW. And yeah, you know, I think that's a really good win for them. I think that that raise, that 10% marker, is also really impressive because... inflation recently, over the past year and a half, has been getting worse and worse. And a lot of people, especially, you know, entry-level workers like myself, our usual basic raises range anywhere between 2 to 4%.
Yeah.
But inflation has been 6.3% in the past year, which means, in reality, these pay raises are that a lot of workers are...
You're losing money.
Yeah, you're losing money. It's essentially a pay cut in terms of cost of living, in terms of inflation, in terms of, you know, gas prices is part of that. So it's really good to see that they managed to win a raise that can actually accommodate for those things. And I think a lot of people don't take the whole topic of inflation or cost of living into pay raises as seriously as they should.
Mm-hmm.
So good for John Deere. I hope those workers continue to do well in the future. So, yeah.
And the 10% raise might inspire other unions, other individuals looking for work, saying, hey, you know, this isn't even nearly enough.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, with the employers and the corporations screaming that they can't hire workers.
Oh, dear.
Take a hint.
We will be getting to that in just a minute, actually. That's one of our conversation topics today. But one of the first things I wanted to kick off in that particular direction as part of our roundtable discussions, there have been some recent controversies in the labor world between people who are unionized, the union administration, and also employers as well in regards to vaccination mandates for workplaces. And I think that it's been a very touchy subject in certain fields because there are a lot of union workers, such as firemen, certain construction companies that are unionized, et cetera, where a lot of these blue-collar workers have, unfortunately, at least from my perspective, taken on a very anti-vaccine opinion.
They drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, they drank the Kool-Aid. So there's this very weird kind of conflict going on between working-class people who are organized, their union administration, and their employers in regards to how they're regarding these, you know, quote-unquote vaccination mandates on behalf of their union or their employer. And I think that it's a very touchy subject that I haven't heard a whole lot of organized folk really take into account. A lot of times when we hear about these strikes or these labor struggles, especially in the past year, there's been this kind of right-wing notion that, oh, these people are going on strike or resisting their unions or their employers because of vaccination mandates, when it's actually about, you know, pay, benefits, working conditions, etc.
It's always about that.
But the very anti-mask, anti-vax kind of propaganda about it is that it's about vaccines. However, I still think that the topic should be discussed in greater detail because, you know, in terms of drinking the Kool-Aid, it is really unfortunate to see a lot of hard working class people kind of take on a stance that doesn't protect their fellow workers, doesn't protect their fellow union members, and doesn't ultimately help the rest of society protect themselves from a disease that is still very much here. The pandemic is still very much on, and as we're coming into the fall and winter, case rates are expected to explode again. Probably not as bad as last year because of, you know, vaccine rollouts and to a certain degree these mandates on behalf of employers and unions. But it is a very unfortunate and very disappointing thing to see a lot of working class people push back against it, in part because of predominantly conservative, right-wing, pro-business propaganda as well. So I just wanted to touch on
that. Two comments on that, if I may.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
One is, because of the concerns about wearing masks and washing your hands, which as a nurse, I understand it. That is primary. Wash your hands, please, folks, you know?
I know. There's some people who still don't wash their hands after using the bathroom, and it's like, apparently this past 2 years has been so hard for them.
I thought that was for employees only, you know?
I know.
That's
not
what the sign says.
Yeah. Rinsing your hands is not enough. I see plenty of people at my workplace do that, and it's like...
I want to protect my right to infect you.
I know. Jesus.
And the second thing that goes with that is, I read this on the internet, so I don't know if it's true or not, but... the city of New York is requiring their first responders to be vaccinated, except the cops don't like that.
Nope.
And so some officers have said they're going to refuse this and they're going to perhaps not go to work. Well, I want to know, where do we send the thank you cards?
I know. Yeah.
Police Benevolent Association.
I think the part that, you know, aside from the police force, the other thing that makes this situation so... convoluted is that there's been a large number of healthcare workers actually saying, you know, I don't believe in the vaccine or I don't want it. It has a microchip. It's the mark of the devil, blah, blah, blah. And I think there's like, it's a small number compared to the total amount of healthcare workers that are out there actually like helping people get better. But I think one of the recent numbers I heard was 3,000-4,000 people have quit or lost their jobs as a result of it.
Right.
And it's, I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that I think it's the imperative of labor unions to try and counter this propaganda, this, you know, absolute falsehoods about masks or vaccines as much as possible. You know, I definitely give all my sympathy out to the other unions that are trying to make sure that their workers are protected. But I think that this is going to be an issue that's going to hang around for a long time, probably even well after this pandemic, because who knows what the next one's going to be like. And if you get the same kind of pushback with a different disease, you know, it could have much more deadly and concerning results for the labor force in general.
Yeah.
So,
Lynn, you had your hand up. Did you have something you wanted to say?
Well, just that you were talking about the unfortunate timing of some of this, the spikes in cases and so many unvaccinated people. Places like New York City are relaxing, or maybe the whole state, relaxing their mandates on masks. And it's like, what?
Yeah, absolutely.
The new elected mayor of New York City, de Blasio, if you did not comply with vaccination, if you did not comply with the vaccination mandate, you lost your job. Mm-hmm. The new mayor, who seemed to be very conservative, I believe he's a Democrat, he's an African-American man, he said he's going to rehire all of those people that lost their job through the mandate, complying with the mandate. You know, that again, just you know, the politics of this thing are just so complicated, and you know, there's just so much pandering going on. If you look at Washington and Inslee's mandate, I think there's a compliance rate of well over 90% of state employees who have been vaccinated, and again, you can see the infection rate in the state is quite low.
Yeah.
If you look at other states.
You know, I have a lot of oppositional in me and my makeup. I don't like to be told what to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
But there's a point in time when you have to just say, all right, I'm going to put the teenage Marilyn aside and do what's right for the greater good.
Right. And I think that's something, I mean... Americans getting together for the greater good is something that's, you know, few and far between, especially in situations like this. We have reacted to previous pandemics in a better way, with the exception of the HIV crisis for different political reasons.
Right.
But, you know, it is very concerning to me that, you know, working class people don't want to get together and say, yeah, even I will personally admit wearing a mask is not always fun 100% of the time.
Right.
It wears on my ears. It makes my face very humid. It makes me break out a couple times. But, like, it's worth it if it means that my coworkers next to me are safe. Yeah, the vaccine might have the occasional side effects. You know, I got Moderna, and anybody who has Moderna knows that, like, that second dose takes on a bit of a roller coaster ride. But I would still be willing to do it again. So, yeah, that was one topic. And partially tying into this, although not really, it's kind of occurring at the same time. Another topic that I wanted to talk about in terms of these roundtable discussions that we usually have about big labor topics currently going on. And this one's pretty fascinating because I know that previously we talked about the quote-unquote nobody wants to work phenomenon, that that's the usual tagline that employers like to use in regards to the current labor shortage. And I want to talk about the other side of it on the, you know, more working class end of this labor shortage, which is the Great Resignation. Right now in this country, the Department of Labor Statistics says that I think it was about 5 or 6% of people coming out of quarantine flipped their jobs. And so we have several million American workers that are currently trying to find new work, trying to find work that better benefits them in terms of, you know, wages, benefits, conditions. And it's a very interesting situation in this country right now, because as somebody who works in the union, as somebody who is not just now getting into labor organizing and stuff like that, on one hand, my entire heart goes out to people that are trying to find new work, trying to get out of abusive workplaces, workplaces that don't pay well, workplaces that can't offer any kind of treatment or benefit to their workers in the long term. But on the other hand, I think that we might be missing out on some interesting organizing opportunities. I know that some people that are leaving their workplace right now are leaving because, as I previously mentioned, you know, abusive management, it's a hot shop, there's high turnover, poor pay. But on the other hand, I think that one of the big conclusions that a lot of workers could be making right now is, well, should I leave and get an immediate benefit of maybe $1, $1.50 extra an hour? Or could I stay and try to organize? Because if everybody in a particular workplace or a particular industry has the same frustrations, there's great power in organizing right there. And I mean, this is something I've considered with some of the previous jobs I've had as well, where, you know, there was high turnover or people were just very disenfranchised at work. They were just there because they were trying to get out of the, you know, quarantine funk, or, you know, trying to get out of unemployment, essentially get back into the workforce. But I think that on one hand, you know, I definitely support people changing their workplaces if they don't feel like it's enough. But I feel like something that, especially with the IWW, we could be working on is helping those workers organize. You know,
and not every job can be moved overseas, which is the big employer threat.
Right.
There are a lot of jobs that have to stay local, and the opportunities there for organizing are very good right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time to organize.
There's also a very interesting hypocrisy currently right now as well, is that a lot of smaller companies where their workers are trying to organize, aside from the threat of exportation,
mm-hmm.
some of them just straight up shut down. There was the OVEC union with the IWW forming out in, I think it was, West Virginia. They have been organizing there for a couple years now and, you know, having this big fight with their management, trying to get them to recognize and ratify the union in the workplace. And then this last week, OVEC just completely dissolved. Right when they were just at the cusp of being able to get to a unionization vote, when the management knew that they probably weren't going to win that vote and they were going to unionize under the IWW, they just said, well, because of inflation and the mm-hmm. lack of being able mm-hmm. to find workers and not being able to get enough work done and all the usual management excuses to a situation like that, they just agreed to shut down.
And you know what? They'll probably start back up under a different name.
Bingo. Yeah, so I think that now is the time to organize. Now is not just the time to strike. Now is the time to organize as mm-hmm. well. And I think that that is something that could really be taken advantage of at this current point in time. And it would be really interesting to see, you know, what organization developments do come out of this resignation. Because, you know, something that we've said at the IWW for a long time is, well, yeah, you can change your job. You can always find an employer that's going to pay you a few more pennies more on the hour,
mm-hmm.
but ultimately that doesn't really change the nature of your work.
That's right.
Going from boss to boss, you're still going to have to deal with a lot of the same problems. I've certainly experienced that. I've changed my job probably 4 or 5 times in the past 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. I've been hopping around trying to find work that pays me enough to live where I do and enjoy the things that I try to enjoy in life. But I think at some point somebody has to say in a workplace, enough is enough. Let's start talking about solutions. You have a word, Gordon?
Yeah, another angle on this problem of the resignation thing is that a lot of employers and the usual suspects of Business Roundtable and U.S. Chamber of Commerce are trying to paint the picture that because these workers are making so much money on unemployment checks, they don't want to come back to work. It's the same old moral hazard type argument that capitalists have always used. If you give these people anything, they'll just take advantage of it. It's really racist and really classist. And that's not the issue at all. And a lot of workers aren't going back to some of the worst jobs. They're not going back to food service jobs. They're saying, screw this. You know, why should I live without a schedule? Why should I live at the mercy of the employer? And they're just saying, to hell with it. You know, I'm young and strong and I'll find something else, which is part of the motivation.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of the little silver linings about this situation is that finally, after months of pressure, employers are finally starting to do the one thing that we have said the entire time for them to do, which is just pay your workers more. If you want to end the labor shortage in this country, you need to realize that the pay that you're offering probably doesn't let people live within a half an hour or more from where they work.
Precisely.
It doesn't cover the cost of living. It can't get them a gallon of milk and a full tank of gas, you know. And some of the I remember seeing, I think it was from The Economist or somewhere, it was such a hilarious article, and it had to be written in joke form, because it said one restaurant solution to their labor shortage was giving more time off and paying their workers better. And they were treating it as if it was Moses coming down from the mountain with the 2 tablets of the 10 commandments going, here's the knowledge.
Pay your worker.
Yeah.
I gotta do this. I'm looking at a flyer here that says, feeling sad and depressed? Are you anxious? Screwed at work?
Yeah.
Feeling isolated and alone?
Yeah.
You might be suffering from capitalism.
Bingo.
Symptoms may include overwork, crappy pay, arbitrary hours, homelessness, unemployment, poverty, feelings of powerlessness, fear, apathy, boredom, loss of identity, loss of free speech, incarceration, suicidal or revolutionary thoughts. Get relief. Join the industrial workers of the world.
That's right. Line up.
Hold on, sister. Hey, you know, I think this, I think the COVID thing really focused a lot of the issues on the workplace, and you know, in the indomitableness of going to work, and I got this job, I got to do this thing, and you know, when you know the American workers, they say, oh, you know, they brag about the fact that they never take vacations, and you know, they're pursuing all these things. The COVID thing has really, really put an interesting microscope in terms of the work environment. So, you know, quality of life issues come to the fore. Globalization, the impact of globalization, wealth disparity, particularly healthcare. All of these things now comes to the fore because of the COVID and the institution of work, just like the institution of education, just like the institution of churches, all in government. All of these things are being questioned now, and they're weakened, and all of these issues are really coming to the forefront.
Good point,
Matt. And I can
definitely
sympathize with that, because one of the big things that kind of opened my eyes during COVID and eventually getting back to the workplace was with the added benefits to unemployment. When I finally started going on unemployment, I think it was early April of 2020 when I lost my job. With those extra benefits and occasionally the occasional stimulus check, I was getting paid better than I ever had in my life from unemployment. And that was kind of one of those beautiful little moments of crystallization in my mind of going, wow, I've really been treated like crap, haven't I?
Right. So it didn't make you not feel like working at all, and made you look at what level you were being valued at before and how abusive that was.
Yes. And, you know, another thing that kind of ties into this situation of people resigning, people going back to work, wages, that kind of thing, is that these wage increases have been actually pretty impressive. You know, we've talked about this fight for 15 since, mm-hmm. I think it was 2013, 2012 when that campaign began, yeah. and now $15 isn't even enough anymore.
Right.
Exactly. So then these employers are going, well, we finally updated our wages to, you know, $15 an hour 10 years after we started asking you.
Right. And it's no longer worth $15.
We're trying to offer so much, and it's like, well, it's not enough anymore. Even if it was about, you know, wage competition, you also have to deal with the other thing I mentioned, which is inflation.
Oh, inflation.
The
really
dollar is not worth a dollar's worth anymore. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to offer more per hour just to make sure that your workers are being taken care of.
I got a quote that goes along with this. I didn't have a chance to talk about these bus driver strike, school bus driver strike, mm-hmm. but I can distill it all down in the words of a woman named Chanta Henderson. She's a driver in Seminole County, Florida, and her quote is, "The problem is not a bus driver shortage. The problem is a bus driver salary shortage."
There you go. Yeah, you know, I've heard that been talked about a lot as well. You know, it's not a worker shortage. It's a wage and benefit shortage. And, you know, another thing that I've also heard a lot of pro-business capitalists also say as well, a lack of supply creates demand. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? There's a lack of supply of workers, mm-hmm. and now there's a greater demand for workers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the price of our labor has increased. That's something that you should factor into every business, every industry, is that paying your workers, giving them a decent compensation package, you know, et cetera, healthcare, whatnot, should be up to snuff. Because if it isn't, then
we can't
afford you. Yeah, frankly, if you can't afford to pay your workers decently, then you kind of deserve to go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as harsh as the line as that is, like, that is the reality. Yes?
Well, also, if there could be such a fundamental change as to put healthcare in the hands of government, mm-hmm. so no employer has to pay that, think of all the flexibility there would be for negotiating wages.
Absolutely.
And looking at retirement.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so many people would probably be willing or to consider or probably just pull the trigger and quit their jobs if they said, well, I'm only really here because, yeah, the pay is not that great, but they provide me health care. They provide mm-hmm. me dental. They provide me eyesight. I can get my glasses for cheaper. Mm-hmm. I can get my pills that I need to live cheaper. But if we actually had single-payer health care, add a few more million to the people that are currently looking for new work to try and find a better way to live.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the whole organizing thing, just on a brief note, I still think deep down that there are some workplaces that, or at least there's a lot of workers that should take into consideration that before you pull the trigger on leaving and finding a different, maybe slightly better boss, you could also make your boss sweat by getting together with your coworkers, talking about the common problems that you have, and then coming up with solutions in the workplace, i.e. unionization, to try and deal with those problems. Because I think the part of it that isn't being talked about as well is that if you leave a job, somebody else is going to take your place.
That's right.
And so if you can't leave the campground better than where you found it, then what are you really doing to change the situation as a whole across this mm-hmm. country?
So versus simply trying to survive.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think that's a great point. And the other thing, too, about, you know, when you talk about class consciousness, and I think that's what you're kind of alluding to.
Absolutely.
When they were talking about, you know, who are the essential workers, right?
Yeah.
Essential mm-hmm. workers, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're saying, you know, and again, trying to bifurcate the working class, right? Well, we have some essential workers here. And who are the essential workers, right? Women, minorities, lower paid people that had to go out, face the public, confront the COVID menace, right? These were the essential workers, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the white-collar people, where were they? They were home. They were up in their office. They were online. They were doing their work there. So this whole thing about, you know, who's an essential worker? Well, you know what? Everybody's an essential worker. And really trying to really understand, you know, what the value proposition of being a worker is to an organization.
Absolutely. And I definitely sympathize with your point that all workers are essential workers. And it's also very interesting to see how the essential worker tagline has been kind of manipulated over this past year.
Oh, it sure has.
In the beginning, it was like, our nurses, our doctors, our
people
that
are
still... Yeah, they're our heroes, our frontline heroes. And now it's like, well, everybody's coming back to work, or at least in some industries, especially in healthcare. You know, everybody's starting to come back to work. Well, you know... you're going to take what we give you. You're not our hero anymore, so get back to your job. it's a very interesting kind of
It's like
flip.
The knee-jerk, thank you for your service.
Yes.
And people are bailing from that
I'd like to
field.
Go ahead postpone the argument until next time. But speaking of essential workers, you said everybody, well, come on. Advertising? Consultants? David Graeber, who was passed away recently, a member of the IWW, has written, and I said, we'll call it BS jobs, points out that there's a lot of unessential workers.
Yeah, okay.
And they get paid better than the rest of us do, surprisingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
He gives, for example, advertising. Mm-hmm. Do we really need someone to tell us this toothpaste is better than that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Coke versus Pepsi? Which one's better?
Yeah.
International Brotherhood of Hedge Fund Managers.
There you go.
Well, I think an important distinction, at least in that case, would be all working class essential workers, people who have to put their boots on the ground, to actually go out and put up those advertising posters, who actually have to design those posters at home for pennies on the dollar compared to what their management makes. You know, those are the people that are essential. It's the working class people that run the world, not the people who are actually getting credit for it.
Labor creates all value.
Without our brain and muscle, not a single nail will turn.
That's right.
Yes, Lynn?
I wish that there could be, like, somehow all of the unions... put in some kind of a, like speaking of advertising, some kind of a PR thing where it goes out to, even they could put it on to Fox if they would put it on.
They won't.
But that are all...
You pay them enough, they will, maybe.
That if you're interested in forming a union and having a better life and a better future, the idea of unionization is back, you know, and people died for this. And so some way that, you know, if you have questions about it, contact so-and-so, and there could be different local contacts.
You know, and I'm really happy that we're starting beginning to publish off new materials again, like flyers, you know, email or cell phone, little tag posters. I've actually had the idea in the past that, like, if now is the time to not just strike but organize, I want to see billboards by the side of the highway.
Yeah.
Are you encountering poor pay, poor management, poor conditions? Contact the IWW today.
Feeling and sad and depressed?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. You know, maybe a TV spot if we had the budget. But, you know, I mean, now is such a crucial time with nobody wants to work is the management's tagline. But in seriousness, the great resignation, the amount of organizing that's taking on, that's going on in this country right now as a result of people going back to work. You know, the common problems that a lot of working class people to organize, I mean, the iron is hot. Who knows how long it's going to be hot for? Strike now.
Plus, rank and file militancy. This is a trend that is going through the roof. The traditional union leadership of the trade unions has not been responsive to the rank and file, and they're taking matters into their own hand. There were existing movements afoot, especially Movement for Democratic Teamsters is one of them. UAW has a movement within it. There's the Carpenters Union that had the Peter McGuire brigade that instigated a lot of labor action. The thing is that workers themselves are starting to realize, hey, I'm forced to join this union if I want to get a job here. But, gee, maybe if enough of us got hot, we could take it over from the inside, and that's
yes,
what's beginning to happen.
Absolutely. That's another big, you know, development that's taking place.
Occupy the unions.
Exactly.
Occupy the unions, yeah. Rank and file, you know, if the union doesn't work for you unless you actually chip in and help the union work. And it has to be representative of the rank and file. And I really like that you brought up the Seattle Carpenters right now because, of course, they've been having their whole conflict between their union management and their employers as well. They're actually getting investigated right now by the NLRB and the FBI for potential election rigging and stealing of union funds. So.
I'm rooting for the FBI in this one.
I know.
Forgive me.
Yeah. Tagline of the year, IWW endorses the FBI.
Yeah.
But if all the unions were to somehow be able to communicate with one another, and they could come up with the money, couldn't they, for TV spots and billboards?
I mean, it depends on where and the size, but absolutely.
How much did the regional president of the... What union we were talking about last time? $400,000 a year.
Oh, that was the Kaiser person.
Okay,
but Evelyn Shapiro.
Evelyn Shapiro
was the head union boss
right.
of the carpenters in
right.
the region.
That's it.
Evelyn. She topped
Northwest
up,
region. Yeah.
She topped off over $200,000 a year. $200,000 plus.
And the national
and
president
she's now resigned because of the investigation.
Hell
plus,
yeah!
Her second and third level funkies resigned with her.
Can't make a clean sweep, but the thing I'm getting at is that the workers are becoming well aware that their business representatives who pull up in a new Corvette and wear the Mr. Key starter kit, you know, the gold chains and everything. And I've seen these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Machinists District 160, Machinist District 751 for Boeing. And a lot of them have never even been on the shop floor.
They're, you know, the union boss is always a problem as well.
Just well, you got to go back to Evelyn Shapiro. I have to say a couple things in her behalf. She was the first woman elected, and she did work her way from the bottom up.
No faulting her for that, but yeah. What happens is that you get ingrained in that power structure.
Yeah.
Yes.
You start making a couple hundred K a year, you know, you're not going to vote against yourself.
The issue
you know,
is
a good example of that, Trumka. He went to Harvard Law School,
yeah.
And then he went to work for. He became a lawyer. He was a lawyer. He went to work for the union, mm-hmm. and he became. A big.
Did he ever run coal?
No.
See, that's what I'm getting.
Well, it was a summertime job.
Yeah,
he did do that.
Oh wow! A summer intern in a coal mine.
In college, yeah. He's a summer intern.
So I guess to kind of wrap up this discussion. In terms of rank-and-file unionism, making sure that our unions represent the rank-and-file card-carrying members who pay their dues and work on the job, in terms of people resigning from their work to try and find better work, in terms of, you know, the workplaces that they leave behind and their fellow workers as well. I mean, as I said before, the iron is hot. And I think now is not just the time to change your job if you really need to. I think people really do need to seriously take into consideration the fact that now is the time to organize. I mean, if employers are sweating because of a lack of labor, and if we have to go back to work, then we should at least be able to get together and collectively demand things from our employers, because they can pay for it. If John Deere can pay for it,
yep.
Any other big-name employer or even small-name employer can pay for it.
Good point.
And now is the time to organize, and that's all I want to distress. Our third big roundtable topic today is going to be talking about environmentalism, how unions play into it, and any recent developments that have been occurring on the environmentalism front.
Well, there has been a lot that has happened. Where do I begin? The COP26 just finished up in Scotland. As Greta Thunberg would say, there was a lot of blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But the heads of state left generally, U.S. and China not having signed on to the needs that were so clearly presented.
Yes.
They resulted in a much watered-down agreement. So instead of phasing out coal, we're phasing down coal.
What does that
mean?
Yeah, what does it mean? It's very general.
It's kind of the same situation that's happened with other environmental conferences like this in the past, which is that we're going to come in and we're going to talk about making big changes, and we're going to, you know, sign the paper, we're going to do the thing, and we're going to, you know, kick fossil fuels to the curb and save the world. And then at the end of the discussion, it's like, we believe that the climate is a problem.
Yeah.
Sign here.
Oil companies for orcas.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've learned a lot of things in the last month or so, and I've been following the COP26. There were some positive things that came out of it, and one of them for me was that for the first time, the role of militarization in escalating climate chaos actually came up. And there was a symposium with scientists and Veterans for Peace, etc., that actually presented factual information about what the facts and figures and rates are. And while it's incredibly scary because of the ambitions that they have to completely grid the entire Earth in sonar and radar, basically spyware, that will facilitate the death of marine species and animal species as a byproduct. It's terrible.
And not to mention getting that spyware into space also burns a lot of fossil fuels.
Right, right. Too. Well, I'm getting to that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I learned that one of the roles of whales is they're a huge facilitator, making the oceans capable of absorbing carbon dioxide more efficiently. Mm-hmm. If you kill off all the whales, it's bye-bye ocean. This panel I would highly recommend to anybody who's listening. The first speaker is less than fascinating, but the rest of them are wonderful. And you can find that on the Veterans for Peace website, veteransforpeace.org. And then go to the COP26 and go to the videos that they've got. It's well worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
what else is happening? Well, here in little old Tacoma, those of us that have been working to combat and reverse climate change have had an ongoing battle with what's happening in our industrial tide flats, which is a petrochemical soup down there.
Absolutely.
Highly dangerous. And unfortunately, the city and the county have decided language doesn't matter when it comes to agreements. And they have also done a little bit of linguistic magic in the new Tide Flats area plan. And it will continue to allow petrochemical companies that, quote, already exist, never mind whether or not they've actually started up. Mm-hmm. If the structure is there, they're existing. And they will be allowed to expand 15%. The good news of that part of the thing is they won't be allowed to build new tanks for storage unless, and get this language, no specification, unless the fuel has any amount of alcohol in it.
2 days ago, they had the largest lease,
Gulf
lease auction in the Gulf of Mexico. And all the unions supported it, right? Yeah. They said, oh, this is going to create jobs.
Yeah, well, that's the big split. They want you to think it's either green or jobs.
Right. And what about, how does that
compute?
Well, how does that translate into what's going on in the Port of Tacoma with the unions there and the workers? How do they perceive this?
I have an opinion.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
We are being played for suckers. So what they do is they pit the workers against the people that would like to live and have their children live. Mm-hmm. And they're being told that, oh, it's the jobs. The same old sorry, sad line. If we cleaned up the port, it would bring and brought in clean energy, it would bring in more jobs.
Yeah.
But they're playing that same song.
Because I think that when we talk about this tug of war between do we care about the environment or do we care about people having work, I think that unions need to start taking a more serious role in saying, look, if you're coal workers, if you're gas workers, if you're natural gas workers, if you're any kind of fossil fuel or some other energy source that directly contributes to climate change, we need to train you for the next era of jobs. Mm-hmm. We need to treat you how to work around or with solar panels, wind energy, hydro energy. Point is that unions could be taking a proactive role in saying, we know that these jobs are not going to exist at a certain point in the future. We need to train you for the next jobs.
When we think about these issues and talk about them, we might remember there are no jobs in a dead planet.
Yep.
Yep.
I want to bring in a little fact that I learned when I listened to Kristen Ang, who is one of our port commissioners, and she's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things she said in testimony is, first of all, the threat, oh, it's the jobs. Without all this, you'd have no jobs. She said, now look, the majority of those jobs do not come from these petrochemical companies. It comes from the Port of Tacoma that's providing the auxiliary services. We provide 60% of those jobs. It's not these companies. So if the companies ended up going, other jobs would move in. And the port would go on, and jobs would go on. But you're right, we need to do the training, and we need to put our money where our mouth is.
Right, and the unions need to be a big part of that as well, because they're, as we've seen with, you know, if we're not going to have coal or gas or some other form of fossil fuel production in the next 30, 40, 50 years, fingers crossed, then where are these workers going to go? What are we going to do about them? How is our union going to change as the way that we address the climate issue change?
It's called just transition. Mm-hmm. If we can convince workers that, hey, you'll make just as much money and it's a similar trade, because pipe fitting's pipe fitting. Electrical work is electrical work, right? Mm-hmm. And no matter what you're in support of, these projects can be done on a green basis so that everybody benefits and the planet benefits.
Well, I think that just about tops off all of our big discussion points. Pleasure talking with all of you. In terms of our conclusion, general housekeeping, we recently, well, I wasn't present for it, but many IWW members were down in Centralia back on the 11th, I believe, to go help visit and clean up Wesley Everest's grave. We talked about him in our previous episode about in November we remember. That's kind of the theme of our month for the union, is kind of remembering all of our labor heroes and martyrs of the past. And so there was a big get-together down in Centralia. Thanksgiving's coming up in a couple days, and I guess in closing, I just want to say I'm very thankful that I'm part of the IWW. I'm very thankful that this organization is here and that we have all of our fellow workers, not only just working on this radio project, but on so many other organizing campaigns in this country. I'd like to wish all of our fellow workers out there a happy holiday season. 1 year down, so many more years to go, so much more organizing to do, and, you know, we're happy to have the workers that we do to help, you know, carry the work along. Thank you all for getting together with us for another episode of WOB Radio. It's been a pleasure speaking and working with you all again, and we hope to speak to you again next month. Solidarity.
Solidarity.
Yeah.